From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful, bonus mini call show edition. I'm Dan Pashman. Still working on the name of these mini shows, and I'm joined once again by my friend Kenji Lopez-Alt of Serious Eats. He's, of course, the author of The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science. Hey, Kenji.
How's it going?
What do you think of the name? The listeners, we've been getting a lot of suggestions. It's a little unwieldy.
Well, you know, I've been doing some call-in episodes with Ed on his podcast, right. Special Sauce, and we've been calling that Extra Special Sauce, but Extra Sporkful doesn't quite work.
Right. Some people said, like, you know, instead of a sporkful, it could be like a teaspoonful, because that's like a smaller implement.
Yeah, or a grapefruit spoon. You still need something that I think has tines and a bowl.
A grapefruit spoonful. All right, work in progress. So can I ask you a quick question before you take a call?
No.
Oh.
Sure.
Yes. All right. This is something I've run into lately in the kitchen. So my mother-in-law cooks her chicken and her turkey in such a way where she covers it with oil and salt and a lot of spices, puts it in the pan, and then adds a lot of water into the bottom of the pan, at least like an inch, maybe more of water. Then she covers the whole thing with foil tightly and bakes it for what I perceive as a long time.
Okay.
And it's delicious. My wife has tried to replicate her mother's chicken.
Okay.
And it's never the same. For whatever reason, the meat is always, it has the texture of not being fully cooked. Even though it has the color of cooked and it has the temperature, I use the thermometer. The only thing I can think of is that because I'm kind of a tyrant about like taking the chicken out the second it hits the temperature, there's something about the steaming process and what it does to the texture that my mother-in-law leaves it in for a long time.
Right. Okay, so I have a very similar situation. My wife's family cooks their turkey, they're Colombian, but they cook their Christmas turkey the same way. Not with a lot of liquid, but in a very, very tightly sealed container so that it ends up steaming, and they cook it for a very, very long time. And the first time I went down there and had it, I was like, oh, they're putting the turkey in and we're not eating for like the next 6 hours. This is going to be overcooked and dry. And then it wasn't. It was really tender, like almost fall apart. Juicy.
Yeah.
I think the reason is that the way we traditionally cook turkey, at least in the U.S. and what most recipes here are, you treat it as a quick cooking thing, the same way you would treat like a roast or a steak, where you're really just trying to hit one specific temperature and then calling it done. And generally, that temperature is 155 degrees, 160 degrees, something like that. What recipes that steam the turkey for a very long time do, you're essentially braising the turkey. So you're taking it well beyond the stage that we would normally stop cooking, but then you continue to cook it for an extended period of time. And what happens is that the connective tissue then breaks down and then it's able to reabsorb some juices. So you end up with a very different texture, a braised texture more than like a roasted meat texture. So I think the answer is that you're probably not cooking it long enough. Like I would worry when you're braising and when you're slow cooking, worry less about the internal temperature and more about the texture that you're going for. So it's done once the meat has tenderized again after getting tough.
All right, that's good. I like that. I'm going to work on that. I'll report back to you.
All right.
All right. Should we take a call?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Marissa calling from Napa, California.
Hey, Marissa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm here with my friend Kenji. Tell us what's on your mind.
I've been having this long-standing dispute with my boyfriend of 7 years about what sorts of foods are sedentary foods and what sorts of foods are portable foods and if that distinction even exists. So here's the situation. I'm currently in graduate school. I take a lot of my food on the road. And Alex is a teacher at a boarding school, so he lives and works in the same place. And he does not see a distinction between like these two categories of food that seems to be a distinction that's like really clear to me. And so he might decide to just like eat a granola bar sitting on the couch, which to me is absurd. You know, a granola bar for me is like a portable food item. And I define a portable food item as a food that requires like very little preparation and a food that can be eaten with one hand. So like something that I could eat while I'm driving to school. And so when I stock the larder with my portable food items and I return to find those portable food items depleted, I am enraged. And so I have been looking to get a third party that can weigh in on this discussion of whether or not this distinction between portable foods and sort of sedentary foods exists in my mind, or if Alex can eat whatever food he wants at whatever time and live in this anarchical way that destroys my that destroys my system of organization.
You did a good job of defining portable food. Can you give us an right. example of a sedentary food?
Your bowl of cereal. Your bowl of yogurt with some granola sprinkled on top.
Is it that, do you both agree on what portable foods and sedentary foods are, and Alex just doesn't care that he's eating portable foods in a sedentary position?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like a worldview thing. Like, he sort of lives by this philosophy that, like, food is for eating.
Right.
And, like, I will not be bound by these arbitrary rules. The disagreement stems from this broader discussion of what sorts of rules make sense to have about food, and is one of the pleasures of adulthood living in a space where no one can tell you not to eat the dried mangoes.
Mm-hmm. Now yeah. we're getting to the heart of the matter. and would you say, Marissa, that these two respective worldviews of yours and Alex's go beyond food?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We were on a hike with some friends the other day, and we ended up generating, like, if we were a town, what would the slogan of our town be? And everyone universally agreed that Alex's slogan would be, Alex Kelty, let's have it all right now. and my slogan was, Marissa Coyne, only if we can do it my way. And so, like,
can I ask you a quick series of yes or no questions? Like, I just want a yes or no answer. Short series of questions.
Great.
We'll start easy. Would you be annoyed by seeing Alex eat dried mango in a car?
No.
Would you be annoyed by seeing him eat dried mango taking a walk?
No.
Would you be annoyed by seeing him eating it on the couch?
Yes.
Would you be annoyed by seeing him leave the house and take a drive around the block just so that he could eat dried mango?
Yes. That is a loophole that I hadn't considered.
But it seems like you feel like there should be a legitimate necessity.
Yeah, you should have to pass some sort of litmus test within your own mind. Like, does this qualify as a dried mango moment, or is this a fresh banana moment?
Treadmill? You know? Treadmill, does that qualify?
It depends. Yeah, I mean, if
hard
you're
to eat a bowl of cereal on the treadmill.
It is hard to eat a bowl of cereal on the treadmill. Yeah.
Maybe that's a really good test. Could you eat it on a treadmill? And then that would determine if it is a sedentary food item.
All right, I think we should. Alex is there, right, Marissa?
Yeah, he's right here.
Let's get some info from Alex so we can loop back to Marissa.
Okay, all right, sounds good. Right. Let me put him on.
Hey, guys.
So, Alex. I know that Marissa said that because of your respective work, she is much more often the one who eats on the go. But do you ever have need to eat on the go?
Yeah, you go on a bike ride here and there, and I'll bring a bar with me.
And have you ever been in a situation where you were going out for a bike ride and you wanted to bring a snack with you and you went to the cupboard and found that all the portable foods were gone because you ate them on the couch last night?
Oh, yeah. I'm sticking, like, tortillas in my pocket. I've like, biked with apples in my jersey.
So you never got in that situation and said, oh, man, I wish I hadn't eaten the last granola bar last night because it would sure come in handy right now.
No, in that moment, I'm like, man, that was a great idea. That was such a good granola bar.
So you're a hedonist. You want it all right now.
Well, yeah, and I want to feel like it's rational, also, like that hedonism is completely rational.
Mm-hmm. So why is it rational to eat the foods that you know your girlfriend would prefer for you to save for her use at a time when she needs them, when you could be eating a bowl of cereal instead?
Well, I know that. In her heart of hearts, like, she has conflicting wants too, because she wants me to be happy. In those moments, I rationalize it like, part of her is happy that I'm at home enjoying the mangoes of my labor.
Would she ever offer you a go-gurt when you're not actually on the go?
She would.
I have to say, Alex, I know it's three of us guys here talking, but I feel like your perspective is so stereotypically male.
I know.
You're basically saying is, like, I think it's fine for me to do this thing that drives my girlfriend crazy all the time because she wants it that way.
Or she's wrong for being crazy.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, can I ask like the just the practical question here? Why why not just get more snacks so that you don't run out of snacks?
That's exactly my point. I feel like let's just have more snacks. And like already we're very our budget snack budget is absurd. And I for one could feel like it could be more absurd because
sure, ask the hedonist to set the budget.
Right. I'm like more for everybody. More for everybody all the time.
Alex, what do you teach?
I teach environmental science.
And what would happen to our environment if your students behaved the way you suggest we all behave?
Well, certainly it would be the tragedy of the commons.
Yeah, we'd be in a wash of a sea of Go-Gurt wrappers.
Right, right.
But I mean, like, as a general matter, do you see any conflict between your hedonist approach to life and your concern for the environment?
Oh, yeah, it's in a stark contrast. It's a stark contrast. It stands in complete paradox.
Can we talk to Marissa again, please?
You may.
All right. Marissa, Alex says that in part he justifies eating portable foods on the couch because he thinks that there's part of you that is made happy by knowing that he is happy.
I mean, I don't think that that is entirely wrong. I've observed over the course of our relationship that one very simple way to make him happy is gummy candies, ice cream. That's like a way that I can like demonstrate affection.
Right.
And so,
but you draw the line. You draw the line, and you don't want to demonstrate so much affection that he's taking your the last granola bar when you have class tomorrow and you need it.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's bring this to a conclusion here, Marissa. Kenji, do you have advice you can share?
What I would suggest is having is further dividing your pantry space so that you have a, you know, like a please do not touch section, like for the go only section, but then also have a selection of snacks that are maybe to go snacks, but that can be consumed at any time at will. That way, you know, he exercises a little bit of control, but you also give a little bit and offer these kinds of snacks to him even when he's not on the go. Also, maybe getting a treadmill in your living room so that he can pretend to be on the go while eating them.
I would just add one thing. I think that's great advice, Kenji. I would mostly agree. I would just take it one step further. I don't know that Alex can be trusted to not dip into that other bin if it's right in front of him.
I fully agree with you.
Marissa, I think you need a secret stash. That's what this comes down to. You need a secret stash. Alex isn't allowed to know where it is. You keep it under lock and key, and that's yours. And Alex, you know, just don't even tell him what's going on with it. And you should take from the regular pantry most of the time, and your secret stash is there for emergencies.
I fully endorse this plan.
Look, the key to a successful relationship is secrecy. So, isn't that what all the marriage counselors say?
Go-Gurt should come out with a new product called Stay-Gurt. It's exactly the same, except the one word.
There's
on the package.
There's a market for that.
Right. All right, well, Marissa and Alex, enjoy the secret stash. Good luck there in California.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Kenji. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Kenji, always a pleasure, my friend. Kenji Lopez-Ault from Sirius Eats. Read his column, The Food Lab, on Sirius Eats. His book is The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot.
Quick request before I let you go. There's something you can do to help the Sporkful out just a little bit, and it won't cost you a dime. What you need to do is go to iTunes or the podcast app, if you have an iPhone, and give our show a review, hopefully a good one. What that does is we get a lot of good reviews, Sporkful goes up in the rankings, more people can discover our show. So please, go to iTunes or the podcast app and leave us a review. Thanks. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Shoshana Gold, Ann Sandy, and me. Engineering help from Irene Trudell. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Julianne Guzman in New York, New York.
And I'm Ethan from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Christina from London, England, reminding you to eat more,
eat better,
and eat more better.